Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Michael Lombardi, the GM Street Podcast, the Friday Football Podcast, theringer.com. Talk to him every week during the football season. He's talked to us a lot about what Ryan Pace and Mitch Trubisky need to take the Bears to the next level and how organizations should be run. Michael, what do you think of the Matt Nagy hire?
Well, you know, look, I think what Ryan Pace did was he did what we've talked about all offseason, is you either hire a head coach or you hire a guy who's going to manage the coaches. And I think that, no disrespect to Matt Nagy at all, but Vic Fangio is a key component in this hire. So, you know, he wanted somebody that would take Vic on as the defensive coordinator, which is probably a smart thing. He gets somebody to solve, hopefully, the Mitchell Trubisky situation and improves his play. So he's checked off boxes that he feels like it works, and then he gets somebody who's young who is going to work with him and go along with what his vision is. So, you know, for Ryan Pace, I think he checked the boxes that he needed to do.
Doesn't sound incredibly optimistic from your perspective, I must say. I'm not sure. Have you heard that Vic Fangio is going to stay? We've been following that as, you know, they're trying to sell him, but Vic's a free agent at this point.
Right. Well, I think that this move was made under the deadline that, you know, look, if they wanted to hire Josh McDaniels, he and Vic, although I'm sure they have great respect for one another, it's just a different philosophy. So I'm sure that this move was made with such a sense of urgency so that they can try to get Vic on board, which makes sense. Look, Ryan signed a 3-year extension. He knows he is on the line and he knows he needs to. And keeping Vic there, keeping that defensive scheme in place, is a key component to this hire. If he's got to go outside the building and change philosophies, then it might be. But this is not, I'm not being negative towards Matt Nagy at all. I've heard nothing but good things about him as an offensive coach. I think it's going to be interesting as he learns and develops into a head coach. But the trend in the NFL, and we've talked about it all fall, is that you hire a guy that can handle one side of the ball, hope you find another guy to handle the other side of the ball, and worry about being a true head coach later. And that worked in Los Angeles this year, and I think that's going to be the trend as we continue.
Yeah, we're cool with Ryan Pace following that exact trend, and that's what we've been watching and wanting to do. It sounds like you see the aggressiveness more about Fangio. We've been seeing it as Ryan Pace, just like he did with Trubisky, identifying his guy, for better or for worse, and going out and getting him before anybody else could get him.
Yeah, I don't know that. I know Indianapolis was interviewing somebody yesterday. I don't think they were in position to hire a coach at this time. I don't know his competition, whether it was Arizona. Detroit's wasn't going to hire Matt Nagy. They've already picked their coaches. It's the worst kept secret. They just haven't announced it. I think they'll be hiring Matt Patricia at some point this week, or at least announcing that they intend to do that. So I think, I'm not sure what his competition was, but look, give him credit for being decisive in his decision making and seeing a guy, recognizing what he wanted to do and making the hire that he needed to make. I mean, look, everybody, I'm not second guessing or first guessing anything that Ryan's doing here. I think what Ryan's doing is doing exactly what he feels most comfortable with doing based on his upbringing and training.
But you will downgrade the hire if Vic Fangio becomes the defensive coordinator of the Packers.
I think it becomes a little bit harder to do. Now, that's not saying he couldn't find another good defensive coordinator out there. I mean, look, Vic is tremendous at what he does, but he's not a lone wolf in the arena. You know, I mean, there's other good defensive coaches, and there's other good young defensive coaches that you can find. This is all about fit and philosophy. This is all about continuity as well. And I think that's really where this situation was going. He's got a defense in place that he's been drafting to for the last couple seasons with Vic there. And I think he feels like with that drafting and with that selection process, it can help Matt turn things around quicker than if he would have to go out and get another guy and then sell him on player Y, sell him on player B, and so forth.
Michael Lombardi is our guest. So what do you know about, you know, we know he's on the Andy Reid tree. We know the story is play calling for the last five games, but I've been told from people there that nothing really changed in-house. I used to cover the Chiefs before I came to Chicago. What do you know about Matt Nagy specifically?
Well, I mean, look, he's been trained by Andy Reid, so he knows the West Coast offense. I think for Bears fans, the most critical component here to really appreciate and feel like you've got somewhere is when Andy Reid traded for Alex Smith, Andy Reid abandoned the true West Coast offense. He went to what I call college West Coast, okay? He basically took Urban Meyer's Utah offense and incorporated it into the Kansas City Chiefs offensive playbook and developed an offense to make Alex Smith successful. And therefore, a lot of shorter passes, a lot of quicker reads. It made Alex Smith really almost an MVP-type candidate early in the season, and he played well for him, didn't turn the ball over. That's what Matt Nagy will try to do with Mitchell Trubisky. This is all about Mitchell Trubisky being able to develop an offense that fits him. He needs to be in the gun. Alex Smith is in the gun quite a bit. He needs to have a lot of run-pass options. That's what this Urban Meyer West Coast offense does. That's something he was used to. So it fits. All the pieces fit. Now, whether Trubisky can actually do all these things, we've got to remain to be seen. Can he coach the quarterback and develop the quarterback? In Kansas City, Andy Reid is king, okay? So he runs that team. I think Matt Nagy has learned from a really good coach. What Bear fans has to hope for is that Matt Nagy threw away the game management book that Andy Reid uses and has his own one.
Yeah, that is true.
That is for sure. All right, I like the way that is described. The classic Bill Walsh West Coast offense, which is taught to Mike Holmgren, which is taught to Andy Reid, and which is passed on to everybody, but it's modernized with Urban Meyer and all these RPOs, and I would expect Matt Nagy to bring that kind of thought process here. Why do you think Andy just keeps churning out coaches, man? If Pat Shurmur gets a job, it'll be 8 of the 32 coaches in the NFL who are from the Andy Reid coaching tree.
Well, I really think it's from the Bill Walsh coaching tree, really. I think it's this West Coast knowledge, and I think the reality here is it's really hard to find bright offensive coaches. For some reason, the NFL doesn't have a lot of guys, and I've said this on the show before. Bill Walsh used to say it all the time. It's really hard to evaluate the quarterback. It's even harder to coach him. And I think what happens from the Walsh tree via Holmgren, via Reid, is you find guys that can run an offense. And that becomes head coaching material because they're so hard to find. If you went defensive coordinator, say you hired Jim Schwartz, your next question is, who's going to be the offensive coordinator? That's a tougher answer. That doesn't mean it can't be answered. It's just a tougher answer for the people in management to accept and move on from. And I think there lies why they've been so many guys hired from that tree, and they move the football. I mean, look, you know, Doug Peterson, you know, and I have my comments about Doug Peterson, but the reason he got the job is because he knew that offense. It wasn't because he had this incredible leadership vernacular and he was going to be able to dominate and motivate men. It was because of the offense.
Yeah, I've been told by people around it that they saw Nagy as a better coaching candidate than Peterson.
Well, look, I mean, Peterson was on his way out of Kansas City and he fell into a head coaching job. That's not to be denied. I mean, that's a complete fact. And I think that is why Matt Nagy's been so successful.
Michael, how do you feel like we've talked to you a lot about Trubisky, obviously, but how do you feel like Trubisky's skill set fits with what Nagy is trying to do?
I think it's the only chance he has. Look, if he would have tried to hire Josh McDaniels, and I love Josh McDaniels, but I really think Mitchell would have struggled in the Patriots offensive system. It was way too many moving parts. It was way too complex. It required way more experience than I think he would be able to develop in a short span of time. I think Josh McDaniels, look, if you're going to hire, who is the best offensive coach out there? Is it Matt Nagy or Josh McDaniels? I'm sorry, Chicago fans, it's Josh McDaniels. However, if you've got Mitchell Trubisky into the equation and you basically, instead of saying what I call false dualities, which is A or B, you really look at C, D, E, and F in terms of your answer, I think you find that this offense is probably more conducive to where Trubisky needs to be on a trajectory in the next 2 years.
So what do they need? Like, what do the Bears not have that Ryan Pace now needs to go get, right? He's got his coach, he's got his quarterback, he's got his running back tandem. In theory, well, he's got his Travis Kelce and Adam Shaheen, but we don't know. Like, well, what's next on Ryan Pace's to-do list?
Well, I think he's obviously got to get some outside weapons. I mean, what we saw last week in the game was when Travis Kelce went out, is not a tight end. You know, let's just scratch that from the description. He's a wide receiver. He's an inside wide receiver. He and Anquan Boldin basically played. That's what he does, and he's really, really good at it, and he does it really well. However, that being said, I think what you have to see here is they need more outside skill because Trubisky's going to need to force to throw the ball on the outside. Whether Sheen can beat Kelce, I don't know that. I haven't seen enough to say that's true. Kelsey's a man inside, and he's really tough, and he makes a lot of plays, and he's got great athletic skill in terms of being able to run routes and separate immediately with his quickness. So, you know, I think that's the model you're going to see and follow. I think they need to continue to develop skill players. They've got a good offensive line. I mean, look, let me say this to you really clearly. Kansas City's offensive line is not that good, all right? They struggle. I mean, Eric Fisher was the first pick overall in the draft. He struggles at left tackle. Mitchell Schwartz, they paid a lot of money. He struggles at right tackle, but because the scheme helps them, they look a little bit better. I think that'll help the Bears line as well.
I can't wait to see Trubisky in this scheme, especially with the free agent dollars that will be spent at wide receiver and perhaps offensive line as well. Michael Lombardi is with us here from The Ringer. All right, Matt Patricia's going to Detroit. Do you think Josh McDaniels is leaving this year? Is he going to take one of these jobs?
Well, I think obviously it comes down to really Indianapolis. He's not involved in the Arizona thing. I'm not sure the New York Giants is the right situation for what he wants to do. So I think that remains to be seen. But, you know, I think it's, you know, the timing could all be perfect if it's Indianapolis. Look, it's, a lot of it's going to come down to is the health of Andrew Luck there. If it's Andrew Luck is healthy, then that's a great job in Indianapolis. If he's not completely healthy, then you've got some rebuilding to do.
So Seth Wickersham writes the long-form piece at ESPN with all of that stuff in it, including Bob Kraft mandating a Jimmy Garoppolo trade to make Tom Brady comfortable. Kraft angrily responds to Peter King, and Belichick says, absolutely, I'll be there next year. I have a great relationship with Alex Guerrero. I mean, so they've denied everything. Where's the truth here, Michael?
You know, I don't know. I mean, look, when I was there, Alex Guerrero was a huge part of what we did. I didn't see a problem there when I was there. And in terms of the Jimmy Garoppolo thing, I think the reason we're having this piece and the reason there is this smoke, if you will, is because of the way Garoppolo has played. I mean, the way Garoppolo has played has taken people by surprise. I've been accused of being a Patriot homer, which, in fact, I am. I mean, I won two Super Bowls there. I'm excited to say I was a part of it. But nobody believed me when I said Garoppolo was great because they thought I was just being a homer. And I think that Garoppolo taking the league by storm, being really great, everybody was expecting more Matt Castle than they were Tom Brady, and they got more Tom Brady. And I think that creates a story, is why would you trade this unbelievable talent for just a second-round pick? And I think what happened was the unknown factor in this whole situation was Don Yee's the agent for both Tom Brady and he's the agent for Jimmy Garoppolo. So Belichick got cornered. He couldn't make a deal. He didn't want to make a deal last offseason because he's dealing with a 40-year-old quarterback. Could he come back and play at that level? I think Bill ran out of time, and he took the best deal. And he also wanted to make sure that Jimmy went to the best place that Jimmy could have success. And I think that's why he picked Kyle Shanahan.
Michael Lombardi from The Ringer is our guest. Let's just say Bill Belichick was on the trading block. What's the offer? What's he worth? Let's just say it's over, it's done, he's gone, he's 65 years old, Gruden was two firsts and two seconds. Like, what do I got to offer to Bob Kraft to get Bill Belichick?
Gruden's a $100 million coach. He's three games under 500 in his last six seasons. And if you go back and look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when he left them, they were an old team in decline. And it took a long time to recover. I mean, you know, the power of television is incredible. The reality here is that the head coach should be attached to the salary cap. I think he is as important as the quarterback. He is important as the star player. There's no one more important when you get a great coach. And Belichick is worth whatever it costs to get him. Whatever you could say, Don, for Bob Kraft, because he's worth it. It's like having a great offensive line coach. You know, when you get a great line coach and he can develop offensive linemen and from low-round picks into starters, you're basically saving the company $5 million. So if you paid a line coach $5 million a year, would it be a lot? No, I don't think it would be because he's developing talent that you can live with. And so what is Belichick worth? It's unlimited. And it's Four first-round picks? Look, I would pay whatever it costs to get Belichick because the one thing I know, I build a program. And those first-round picks might work out. They might not. I know Belichick works out.
Four first-rouners.
All right, I'm just curious. It was two firsts and 2 seconds for Gruden.
How about where are we on ownership stake going to coaches?
Oh, that was such a crock of story. Come on. Did you buy that? You could not have bought that for 1 second.
That's no.
That's a Bob Lamont plant if you could ever see one. I mean, the greatest manipulator. Bob Lamont should really be in The Wizard of Oz. He's behind that curtain manipulating everybody's thought. He's unbelievable with the press. He's so good at it. He should run the Democratic campaign next year. I mean, he's tremendous And so he floats that out there, he's going to get ownership. Really? The last guy, coach who got ownership was Vincent Thomas Lombardi at the Green Bay Pack at the Washington Redskins. He got 3% of the Redskins that he had to sell back immediately upon his death. That's never
going to
happen.
Yeah, I thought it was 5% for Lombardi because I was digging back through that stuff too. So you're not buying it at all. How about for Belichick?
Stop.
How about for Belichick? Oh. You give Belichick a couple points?
I would think he'd be worth a couple points. I don't know. Just like I thought Lombardi was worth a couple points. But listen, I don't know if. You know, look, points turn into dollars, right? So it doesn't really matter whether we call it ownership or whether we call it dollars. Gruden got $100 million for 10 years. It's backloaded to save him on taxes. Did he get points? No, but he got a huge deal for 10 years. He got $100 million, but he's no different than a player. I mean, if I'm the Raiders, right, I just basically say my cap next year is $169 million, not $179 million, because we're paying a huge price for this coach, and it's going to have to come out of player cost.
Michael, how do we judge Matt Nagy? How do we know if he's doing a good job?
Well, I think you know how Trubisky's playing. I think that's key. Because you're going to get, look, if you keep Fangio, you're going to get consistency with the defense, right? So you know what that's going to be like. And I think you got to look at the team. How does he handle situational football? I mean, look, that's the Chiefs' downfall. I mean, I'm writing this book called Football Done Right, and the last section of the book is what drives me crazy. You know, the things why I mute the television like I did last night. You know, just because people say stuff on TV that's so untrue. And the section is about, you know, when you look at the Chiefs and their inability to run a two-minute drill, whether it's the Super Bowl in 2004, whether it's the divisional playoff game in 2015, it took 6 minutes to score a touchdown. Those kind of things, how Matt Nagy handles situational football is going to be critical because it's not something that's done very well under the Andy Reid tree, and I think he's going to have to prove he could step away, take a look at it, evaluate it. When you see a coach call timeout with 2:05 to go in the game, just stop watching TV. Turn it off because that's not right. You understand why, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course
absolutely. Why'd you mute the TV last night? I assume you're talking about the college football game, which was tremendous fun.
Oh, my God. I mean, they're running a screen. They're running a run play, and Herbie's wondering about the interception. I mean, come on. You know, like, at some point, I want to learn something from the game. So I thought what ESPN did last night was brilliant. They had those coaches in the film room. I didn't know it was even on. People tweeted to me and said, you should be watching the film room stuff. And so I did, and I learned something from David Cutcliffe. It was great. I mean, they had all those coaches in there talking about everything. I thought it was great. I want to learn something when I watch a broadcast. I don't want to be sitting there correcting the guy broadcast.
All right. If Michael, there's NFL playoff games going on, which we have talked very little about. But were you as blown away by the Saints as I was in terms of, like, look, they held down the running game completely, did Carolina, and Drew Brees is still Drew Brees. They're still my pick to come out of the conference.
Look, I don't care what anybody says. The key to the playoffs is when a team makes you play left-handed, you still win, right? So the Panthers said, you're not going to run the ball. Ingram, no. Kamara, no. And the Saints still won the game convincingly. Now, it got a little itchy down the stretch, but they played well enough. And look, everybody said, well, their defense kind of leaked. Look, it ain't easy playing against Cam Newton, all right? Like, I'm just telling you, he's hard to defend. He makes you defend the width of the field and the length of the field. And if they had better receivers, he would be even better. So, to me, I thought this, what the Saints did was exactly what you have to do come playoff time. You've got to be able to beat somebody left-handed. Jacksonville, on the other hand, couldn't beat Buffalo running the football. They were forced to go left-handed, and it was only because of Buffalo not being a great team they won the game.
The GM Street Podcast, TheRinger.com. Michael Lombardi will be with us throughout the playoffs on Spiegel & Parkins on Tuesdays at 11. Thank you, Michael.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Appreciate his time, opinion. Passionate, as always. I think it's funny, like, the idea of Vic Fangio being as big of a deal in terms of the hire because of how Lombardi talks about the organizations being set up. It's like, oh, which is more important, the head coach or the defensive coordinator? Clearly, it's the head coach. But when the head coach runs the offensive side of the ball and the defensive coordinator runs the defensive side of the ball, they're more equals in this type of organization than normal. And when you talk about continuity, coaching people up, experience, the Fangio hire is as close to being as important as the head coach as it can be, except for the fact that Nagy's got to develop Mitch Trubisky, which is why Nagy is still more impactful to the Bears than Fangio is.
Yeah, yeah, no. He's
I'm not going to freak out if Fangio leaves. It'll be a disappointment, but I'm not going to freak out if he leaves, because the success or failure of this organization still resides with Mitch Trubisky's successes.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not necessarily, there's no way that one is more important than the other, but it's easy to overstate the importance of Fangio because there's one important thing that he could do for Matt Nagy. Dave Wansett actually also talked about it this morning with Mullin and Hanley.
Yeah, we'll talk about his value coming up next, because I do think that it matters more here than it does most places.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go as far as to say that it's on that same level or the timeline was hurried up because of Fangio or all of that. Like, mm-hmm. hopefully they got their guy because they think he's the next Sean Payton, the next Andy Reid, the next legitimate coach that you want to be here for a decade plus. We'll talk about the value. 312-644-6767. We got time for calls too, leading up to the press conference at 1, and then Matt Nagy going to be on with B&G after that on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Dave Wanstead with Mullin and Hanley earlier today on the significance of a strong veteran defensive head coach or defensive coordinator for young head coach Matt Nagy. The audio brought to you by KFC. KFC's signature pot pie is filled with delicious Kentucky Fried Chicken and veggies and topped with golden flaky crust, all for just $3.99. KFC, it's finger licking good.
Wani's point this morning was, especially if he's gonna operate as the de facto offensive coordinator, if he's putting all the schemes in during the week, if he's scripting the first 15 plays, if he's calling plays during the game, he really needs, if not Fangio, somebody who he can just let do his job. Somebody who's done it for a long time, has a bunch of assistants that he communicates well with, so he doesn't have to go there and like help with those relationships, all that kind of stuff.
Wade Phillips. Sean McVay.
Exactly.
A 60-plus-year-old defensive coordinator who's been coaching for 3-plus decades, who's been a head coach, all of those things. Now, obviously, Fangio hasn't been a head coach, but all of the parallels of continuity and experience and leadership,
yep.
and they can help him along and that sort of thing.
And you just take care of that so I can do my job, especially when I'm also going to be the de facto offensive coordinator.
Because when Lombardi talks about how everything should go through the head coach and so much of the game is being outsourced now, he also admits that there are not that many guys who can do it all. Like, he admits that Belichick is that rare breed that
yes.
does it all, right?
Yes.
That Pete Carroll maybe has input on both sides of the ball, but still has expertise on one side of the ball. Andy Reid, play calling on the offensive side of the ball, even though he is involved in other areas of it. It's just, there aren't many Bill Belichicks. It would be as if you said, you know what I'm going to do to find a quarterback? I'm going to look for guys who are bagging groceries because it worked out with Kurt Warner. Like, I'm going to look for sixth-round right. quarterbacks because it worked out for Tom Brady. I'm going to just go hire people who used to be in Cleveland and let them run my entire football operation because it worked out for the Patriots and Bill Belichick. Like, that's just not how it works.
Right. There are other people out there, though. Like, it's not a Vic Fangio one and done here in terms of the possibility of getting this right.
No, but in terms of continuity, I do think that Fangio has all the leverage in the world.
He absolutely does.
So go talk to Cincinnati. Go talk to Green Bay. Have your agents come up with whatever the top offer is, and then go to the Bears and say, I need a 20% raise on top of that.
Ed Donatell, who's a Fangio assistant, has been a defensive coordinator before. A couple places. In Washington, he was a defensive coordinator. In Green Bay for a few years. So, I mean, they're obviously very friendly and have worked together in a lot of different places. But if Fangio goes somewhere else, you could conceivably elevate Ed Donatell, the defensive backs coach, to do that job. That's
sure.
one option.
Terrell Austin apparently was just hired by the Cincinnati Bengals from Detroit, defensive side of the ball. I know Brad Biggs mentioned Gus Bradley.
Gus Bradley is an attacking 4-3 guy. So different scheme. Biggs was dismissing that, saying with the Bears' talent on defense, it actually could fit very well to a fairly easy conversion. You know, so that's Biggs' opinion, to not worry about that. The other thing is that Gus Bradley might go back to Seattle. The Seahawks are interested in possibly bringing Gus Bradley back there. What do you think about the scheme change, by the way? Because I'm not thrilled with it. That's for damn sure. I mean, you're talking about continuity.
Find out what percentage of plays they play in all different packages. I mean, think about
right.
you know, three down linemen, four down linemen, two down linemen, sub packages, base packages, nickel packages, dime packages. No team is just like, I'm in the 3-4 every single play. It's ridiculous. Most times you're in the sub package because it's a passing league and other teams have at least three wide receivers on the field.
And Fangio admitted as much of that in his season-ending conversation. Said, you know, look, we're always in the subs.
It's about putting players in the position where they are to be successful. Like, Akeem Hicks has a certain type of profile as a pass rusher that is different than Aaron Donald or other players like that.
Now, remember, Akeem Hicks was miscast in New Orleans before going to New England.
This goes back to Les Grobstein and the three technique.
Right.
Well,
A-gap. And Akeem was, and that was a 4-3 in New Orleans that Akeem Hicks was not a fit for as an edge-rushing defensive end.
Right. Well, then draft a defensive lineman with the eighth pick in the draft and play Akeem Hicks in sub-packages and 3-4 packages and all of that, and draft another defensive lineman who you could put out there with Bullard and Unrein and Eddie Goldman and Hicks. You want to have rotation there, too. Get Cleline Farrell from Clemson. Get the guy who had the interception from Bama. Payne, what's his first name?
Deron Payne. Yeah. Do you really want the Bears to get a loser from Clemson? I mean,
yeah, right. Exactly. Why would you want that? Why? But, you know, so draft in that way. Like you defenses in this era need to have versatility.
Yeah. Let me give you a couple other names. Mike Pettine, who used to be the head coach in Cleveland, is a free agent. He's also interviewing in Green Bay as a defensive coordinator. And Pettine is a guy who, look, you could bring him in. He's 51 years old. I didn't realize he was that old, but he's 51. He's coached a lot in the NFL, been a head coach, and obviously been a high-level defensive coordinator. He's available.
Bob Sutton might become available if the Chiefs want a clean house coordinator-wise, and if Nagy wanted to bring him here. They're a base 3-4 defense, and he's had success under Rex Ryan.
Why are they going to fire Bob Sutton?
They just feel like it's time for change, and they're not changing Andy Reid, and they're going to change to Mahomes, and they know that Andy Reid can build a staff because of his connections and respect all around the league. And they might not fire Bob Sutton. They haven't done it yet.
But I saw the rumor.
But there is talk that it might be time. Like, they got to change more than just Nagy and Alex Smith, so let's get different voices in the room all over the place. And Sutton, frankly, would be a downgrade from Vic Fangio based on reputation. But
yeah,
there's going to be a lot of guys that are out there that are experienced.
There's one other guy I was looking around at and thinking about. Former longtime defensive coordinator, many places. Former head coach, took a year off last year, supposedly recharged him. He's now the linebacker coach for the New Orleans Saints. That's Mike Nolan. Linebacker coach for the Saints. So that'd be a step back up to come be a defensive coordinator. That is a dude who has obviously run defenses, run an entire team, et cetera. Somebody you could just turn over the reins to and not have to worry about a damn thing.
I'm not really worried about it because it's about Trubisky and the offensive side of the ball. If they slip, it could be for any number of reasons. But the safest thing is to go make Fangio an offer he can't refuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I hope that they do it. And I do think that they deserve criticism if they don't. You have the money. It doesn't count against your cap.
Yeah.
You're not paying Nagy that much money. Like, there's no way he's an upper echelon coach in terms of salary. Just first-time guy, 39 years old, not a ton of suitors. You're not bidding against other people. You are probably paying a bottom 10 head coach salary. So make it a top 10 assistant coach salary. Right? Like, it's not – it happens all the time in sports. A young head coach, veteran assistant coaches.
Absolutely.
Expensive head coach who has to lose all of his guys, then he has lesser paid assistants because they go there to learn how to get their next job.
I assume they're doing that. We just don't know what Vic is thinking.
Right. He might just say no.
A couple other guys I noticed. Perry Fuel. Remember Perry Fuel? Remember that name, Perry Fuel?
Yeah, of course.
He is the defensive backs coach in Jacksonville right now. How's that working out? Pretty good.
Yep.
Although Perry Fuel's scheme has been called behind the times and longtime cover two guy.
And a lot of talent. Right.
Oh, yeah. That does help.
That's part of it, too.
Jack Del Rio has been a defensive coordinator all over the place and head coach a couple of times, just got fired in Oakland after signing a 4-year extension. He might want to sit around and make some money for a year. I don't know.
Sit around, make some money, don't work, get a broadcasting gig on the side, keep your name out there, and cash in with $100 million and a stake of the next team.
Instead of going back to grunt work as a defensive coordinator or relative grunt work, depending on his personality.
The point is, there will be names.
We're nobodies. We're jamokes.
And we're less than nobody.
We don't matter.
Right.
And we host a midday show. And we just gave you seven to... Well.
The 1-year anniversary. First and last. Coming up. January 17th.
We just gave you somewhere between 7 and 11 names.
Right.
At least 3 of which might be viable.
Why did Jay Zawoski put on his headphones as soon as you said, "We're nobodies, we're jamokes"? Did you get a little excited about that admission, Jay?
I was going to confirm it for everybody. These things have all been verified by the MFED podcast.
Okay, thank you.
Can confirm.
We can report.
We are nobodies and we are jamokes.
Correct.
Hey, how's our desperate angle hunting going on for the Matt Nagy information?
Larry Wisdom, air quotes, is on an airplane right now, so he will not be on the show today.
My Sounds God. Like fake news.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Larry Wisdom is the real estate boss who hired and allowed Matt Nagy to do his thing, and we had that brilliant idea for an angle to tell you people about. All right, so
you know, the more time passes, the less I'm feeling that Larry Wisdom is a necessary guest on the show.
Makes sense.
Like you said yesterday at 1:30, it's like, oh, hell yeah, we have to have him on. And then as the night approached, I was like, am I putting too much work into this? Then the morning came, and I was re-energized by sleep. So I started working hard again, LinkedIn, looking on Facebook for any relatives, going on whitepages.com, looking for anyone named, what is it, Wisdom?
Larry
in the
Wisdom,
Richmond,
yeah.
Virginia area.
Yeah.
Making some phone calls. Hey, is Larry there? Uh-huh. Oh, sorry, I got the wrong number.
When we talked about it this morning, and there was like 10 texters saying, oh, I know a guy who knows Larry Wisdom. I can get you in touch. Any of those leads help?
Well, his son called.
Oh, that's right.
His son is the one that verified that he is on a plane. So
we got. I still think Larry Wisdom's son could be a good bit, but
I wonder if Larry Wisdom will be introduced at the press conference. Maybe he's on a plane to Chicago, and he's the new defensive coordinator. Let's go!
All right. Got it in.
It's payback time for Larry Wisdom.
Now we know why he's laying low.
Matt Nagy's like, remember all those years where real estate led me to football? Time to pay it forward.
If he has true wisdom, he'll go back to the 46 defense, my friend.
Our new defensive coordinator is Larry Lawrence Wisdom.
I think we just broke a story.
I'm just going to say, put it on the website. Put it on the site.
I bet Bears weren't expecting that to happen.
No, they were not, Sam.
No.
None of us.
I didn't even see it coming.
Also, his coach at Delaware will probably be on staff. Although, is he alive? I think he might be dead. And his AFL
get him,
coach.
Jack.
Jake, yes.
That's why he's not answering.
He's definitely dead.
He is dead?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see?
This keeps ringing and ringing.
Jay's going to keep trying, though.
Good.
The AFL head coach. I mean, look, there's angles that we have not. How about his dental hygienist? Rocky Wirtz's dental hygienist was always good for some conversation.
Newsbreaker. Newsmaker. Rocky Wirtz's dental hygienist. You remember the story? Marty Turco. Another story we breathlessly chased.
Thank God. The world needed to know these. Hey, by the way, speaking of the Blackhawks.
We're wasting our lives. Let's get into that coming up next with some other winter tenant news.
Yeah.
Bulls and Hawks ahead of the Bears stuff coming
up. I like it.
All right. It's Spiegelwood Park. Good talk. Spiegelwood Park on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Chance. The audio of Spiegel and Parkins is brought to you by Aurora University Online Learning. Pursue your passion with a degree from Aurora University Online. Choose fully online programs in business, computer science, and more. To learn more, visit online.aurora.edu.
Let's do that hockey. Is that what they say in hockey?
That is what they say.
Yeah,
I guess.
I guess so.
It's not what the hockey people say. It's what the Chance the Rapper said that.
Okay.
Yeah, good stuff.
What do the hockey people say? Don't have old slow defensemen if you can help it.
Maybe don't give them 8-year deals with no movement clauses.
Sad moment, I gotta say, to see that Brent Seabrook is going to be a healthy scratch tonight for the Blackhawks, it appears.
Yeah, that's the first healthy scratch I believe in his career.
Wow.
That I can think of. And look, I guess I shouldn't have to qualify things, but I'm going to. Without Brent Seabrook, there are no 3 Stanley Cups. There's no Hawk dynasty. He's a huge part of why they had success. But his decline has been apparent since 2014, and he signed an 8-year deal last year with a no-movement clause.
That was a disaster.
It's a huge, huge mistake by Stan Bowman. One of his rare mistakes that's an unquestionable mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a problem for a long time.
The good news is there's only 6 years left on it at just under $7 million per in a sport that has a cap of 75%. Ugh. So you've got a guy with 6 years left on his deal and this entire season left getting, you know, basically DNP coaches' decisions.
Can he catch whatever Hossa had? Can we?
I know we joke about it, but we all know that's what's going to happen, right? I mean, that's in 2 or 3 years.
That's 9% of their cap.
They're going to dream something up, and he'll be back in the lineup. He's not awful. He had a really bad game against Vegas, a really bad game. But before that, him and Connor Murphy had actually been playing okay. I think he might just need a little bit of a break here, sort of refocus, I don't know, just kind of get things back together a little bit. because he's not been himself, and it's just just disappointing, man. Brent Seabrook's one of the guys I respect the most on the team, right up there with Taves, and to see him kind of become a punchline, it sucks. It sucks. I know, you know, someone who thinks like Theo Epstein, which is the correct way to think, is you don't pay for past performance. But it is tough to see a formerly great player just fall apart like this.
Totally great player and great, great leader. I will always remember him yelling at Jonathan Taves to get his head on straight in that Red Wings series. Like, he was one of the only guys who could yell at the captain to get your head out of your ass.
Well, he is the leader of that team. He is the vocal leader. Taves was always a lead by example guy. He would talk too now and again. But Seabrook was the guy that commanded that locker room, that got everybody motivated before the games. And he still is. He still has a letter on his jersey.
Do we have an indication?
It's a sad end, man. It just sucks to watch.
Do we have an indication of, is it one game or is it going to be five games? Or like, do we have any idea of how long they're going to do this for?
When Quenneville scratches a veteran, it's rarely for more than one game.
And could they just sell this as just giving him some rest?
Yeah.
Just rotating.
Of course.
And that's maybe what they'll do.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, would they have to announce that ahead of time, though? Like, why do that? Why not just after the fact? Oh,
well, he stayed on the ice after practice, which is always the sign of that. The players that aren't playing will remain on the ice longer than the ones that are playing.
Hmm.
So it's an indicator. And he's got, there's some quotes here. Mark Lazarus has, Seabrook said he just wants to get back to being more consistent. He thinks he's had good stretches and bad stretches. He said, it's tough. I've just got to stay focused. And when I get a chance to be back in the lineup, I've got to be ready to go. So he's acknowledging it as well.
So first healthy scratch of Brent Seabrook's career, six more years on his deal at just under $7 million per as a cap hit. And again, in that sport, that's about 9% of the Hawks cap with the no movement clause. So that is going to be a long slog for him to get back. But on the other side of the winter tenant situation, Zach LaVine comes back Saturday night. Him and Pax and all of them are speaking. It's a 20-minute limit for him. There's only one back-to-back that they have between now and the All-Star break. They've ruled him out already for that.
Hmm.
Haven't said if he'll start, come off the bench.
He said he doesn't care.
He said he doesn't care, and it's 20 minutes. 20 minutes a game is what they're going to keep him at.
So you're going to get to watch Zach LaVine. If you haven't watched a lot of Timberwolves basketball, maybe you remember him from the dunk contest against Aaron Gordon. I hope he looks that athletic and bouncy again, obviously. He says that he wanted to play a couple of months ago. That he's been pushing and pushing and pushing. I'll tell you this.
When I talked to him at Media Day, he said that he could dunk between his legs then. You know what I mean? Like, from, we were just standing under a hoop. And he's like, I could jump up and do it right now. I was like, okay. Then you should do that.
He's expected to be the centerpiece of the Jimmy Butler trade, which already looks pretty good because Lauri Markkanen is a legit prospect. And Chris Dunn, in Zach LaVine's words today, Chris Dunn has his swagger back. Remember, they were teammates, and LaVine is seeing Chris Dunn with the swagger back. Chris Dunn obviously can still give you some very messy games, as he has of late. But man, Zach LaVine is a fun player to watch, and you know what? Good talker, too. Good talker, thoughtful dude.
Bulls fans will like him. I mean, he signed a sneaker deal with Adidas. He's going to sign a long-term deal in Chicago at the end of the season. You know, he's going to be here for a while, and good offensive player, bad defensive player, but a lot of highlights, three-point shooting, dunks. Like, he will be an easy guy to root for. As for Chris Dunn, my buddies and I were talking about it. One of them posited the idea. Has a second-year player ever won the NBA's Most Improved Player Award? Can you take that? Is that even allowed? Just like the year one to year two jump?
Yeah, I think so.
Campy immediately says yes. Who is it?
I'm trying to think of offhand, but whenever that's talked about on, like, different podcasts or shows where they try and predict awards, they always feel like that should be something that's taken out, that the second year player cannot win it.
Right. Because it just feels like, you know, making a freshman to sophomore improvement, the year two leap and all that stuff. But it's insane how good Chris Dunn has been, given the reins, not being benched for turnovers or defensive lapses because they have no other option for it. He's turned himself into a legitimate NBA point guard. And it wouldn't stop me from drafting Trae Young, because in this NBA, maybe those guys could play together.
Your guy, Trae Young.
I think he's everybody's guy, Trae Young.
He's on TV tonight. He's on ESPNU tonight if you're looking for something to watch as well.
I mean, listen, even if he's not the number one guy you want the Bulls to draft, no one is out there as a basketball fan being like, I don't enjoy watching Trae Young play.
The Bulls right now at 7. I'm looking at NBADraft.net, and I love DeAndre Ayton. They have him going 1. They have your guy, Trae Young, going 2. Marvin Bagley, 3. Michael Porter, 4, who hasn't even played. Mohamed Bamba, 5. Luka Doncic at 6, And then is that where the drop-off happens, right where the Bulls will be picking at 7?
Yep.
Right?
That's what they say right now.
It's a six-player draft. Everybody's been saying it's a six-player draft. Get in there, Bulls. They have them taking Jaren Jackson Jr. from Michigan State with Kevin Knox and Mikal Bridges still there on the board below them.
Plenty of time for all of this stuff. Plenty of time for it to turn into a four-player draft or a seven-player draft. Mm. There's plenty of time for all that. Just lose.
Just lose, baby.
Yeah, all right, so the Jazz are interested in Nico. Did you read the reports on that, by the way?
Yeah, it's real stuff.
Bulls are asking for first-round pick. No contracts and a first-round pick. So no bad contracts attached to it and an unprotected first-round pick for Nico Mirotic. If you do that, you trade him the second. You bench him now so he's just healthy. Like you make up this flu excuse that he's got going right now, mm-hmm. and you trade him immediately. If you can get an unprotected first for Nico, you do it.
Let him take his fake jelly and mayonnaise sandwiches to Utah.
I think there's no chance in hell they get it, but that's apparently what they're asking.
Right. Asking for that means at best you're going to get Joe Johnson's expiring contract and a lottery-protected one, which I would still take in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And Utah's right now outside of the playoffs looking in, right? They're a few games under 500.
And they have all their first-round picks moving forward, so let's say the protection probably goes down every year. You'll get a pick this year or next year probably.
All right. So there, and then trade Lopez, trade Holiday, get worse as soon as you can. And Zach LaVine will help you continue to be bad at defense. You're giving up 116 a game in your last five, or more than 116 a game. So and plenty of losses still coming for the beloved Bull. Don't you worry about it.
Social media game upped by the Bears. Ever since an embarrassment, actually, that happened a while back. But you see what the Bears have tweeted? We should discuss as we continue to get ready for the Matt Nagy press conference, which will happen in 1 hour and 5 minutes right here on The Score.
And I got some props for you as we lead you into the introduction of Matt Nagy to Chicago on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.